Today's episode is brought to you by Live Action. On Thursday, October 26th at 2 p.m. Eastern, join me, Ethan Banks, and Live Action CTO, John Smith, as we demo Live Action's real-time network visualization and topology maps for complete situational awareness. Register today at www.liveaction.com/go/WAN. This episode is sponsored in part by ThousandEyes, changing how you see the network. ThousandEyes shows you details of networks you don't own, such as the internet. Find out more at ThousandEyes.com/packetpushers.
This is the Packet Pushers podcast, a place where more than 30 years of networking has built a brownfield so big that the only opportunity is to burn the thing down so we can create an ashfield and then do it right for once. Of course, that isn't going to happen. Most of our networking is covered in dust with piles of overpriced invoices, sourced with technical debt, unused services, and mysterious operational problems that no amount of topical condiments or creams will seem to solve. Today's show is the latest in our Future of Networking series, where we peer over the horizon to speculate about what the future might hold for us as networking professionals, such as we are. Today, we are talking to Brighton Godfrey, who is the co-founder and CTO of Veriflow. Veriflow is a company that's very big into modeling, intent-based networking, and software-centric everything. So what struck us about Brighton is his experience with that, particularly around the modeling, software, and intent. And given that intent-based networking is flavor of the month, or at least flavor of the quarter, networking doesn't actually work on a monthly cycle, it works on decadic things, it makes sense to dive into the guts of what this might look like. And of course, while we're here, we're going to run down as many rat holes as we can find. So Brighton Godfrey, welcome to the show. Say hello to the Packet Pushers audience.
Hello, everybody, and thank you very much for having me, Greg and Ethan.
No problems. So let's just get straight into this. Now, you're got some background in developing this idea around intent-based networking. And to me, intent-based networking is saying, right, now we've been doing software-defined, which is like I pull this lever, and instead of it being an artisanal hand-cranking, you know, configuration of the network and via the CLI and then something bursts into life, SDN is really about pulling a lever and there's being gears and some sort of, you know, like a bit of a motor in there and some things that some of the hard work's done for you. And intent-based networking goes a step forward and it says, why don't I just pull the lever for you? Is that kind of where we're at with intent? Is it kind of moving networking forward, or is it, you know, more sophisticated than that?
Yeah, I think, you know, the idea is what you said, that there's always some knob or dial or lever that you're going to pull because the engineers, the architects know what the business is trying to achieve, right? Mm-hmm. And there's no magic in that. But what can happen is that the way that you express what you're trying to achieve moves into higher levels of abstraction, right? So you can focus on what you're trying to do rather than on how you're trying to do it, rather than on, say, specific, you know, networking constructs that you need to build it out.
Okay, but higher levels of abstraction. So the levels of abstraction required to get the how done is one of those things that's kind of blown my mind, in the sense that when you get into the how, like if you're a hands-on engineer and you're used to building networks, artisanally, as Greg was saying earlier, through the CLI and building out those configuration standards, the how is pretty specific and varies widely from platform to platform. I mean, is it plausible to start building abstraction layers such that the how doesn't really matter anymore?
That's a great question, and that's a big part of what this is all about, I think, this whole broad arc of transformation towards being more software-driven. I could answer the question two ways. One is that if you take any enterprise network, there's dozen or dozens of different manufacturers' devices and models and functions and so on, and protocols and protocol implementations, and they're all somewhat different, right? And some of them have different and useful capabilities, right? And if you're trying to take the business goal, whether that's, you know, build me a resilient network or build me a close network with this capacity or whatever it is, you're trying to actually achieve that in, a collection of random heterogeneous gear, you'd have to understand how all of that works, right? So that could be hard, but that could be achievable. I think the even harder thing is, you know, the variety of specifics about what it is you're even trying to achieve, right? And this is something that, like I said, is part of the broader arc. If we look at SDN, you know, this is technology that roughly for the last 10 years, like about 10 years ago, was kind of the first SDN papers in academic research conferences. And, you know, by the way, there's never a first. There's always something that every work built on something that came before it. So it's a little bit of an arbitrary point, but ballpark. Yeah. You know, over that time, how did SDN evolve, right? So there was a big idea. There was a big idea about making the network more software-driven so that you can write software that controls the whole network rather than, you know, turning knobs and dials on protocols one box at a time.
So that's moving away from configuring device by device in the path.
That's right. Effectively
driving the car to a corner and then pulling out the map and then deciding which turn to take and then driving to the next corner and then pulling the map back out to make another turn to actually work out the end-to-end path like your sat nav does and then says, well, I know what the whole path is so I can just walk you down the path. That's kind of an SDN view of the network.
That's right, yeah. And so that SDN, so that's moving to a more software-driven world. And by the way, same concept in IBM, okay? So that's not a difference. Now, how did that begin to be realized? I think how it began to get some traction was, you know, first of all, the market force of giant hyperscale clouds that could say, okay, yeah, that's a good idea. No, the hardware doesn't exist. The software doesn't exist. We'll build it ourselves.
Yeah.
Right? And there's not a lot of entities that could have done that other than the hyperscale clouds. So that was one driver. But another was taking a killer app and building the SDN automation for that killer app, right?
So the first one was that network slicing. The idea was that academic networks could be sliced into what departments want so they'd all be isolated. And that's not VLANs. It was deeper than VLANs. That was the...
That's right.
Killer app
that
first came out, yeah.
Yeah, that was one of the earliest suggested applications and, you know, got some academic deployment. Then I would say, you know, what I would pick out is Google's efforts in building a very efficient WAN. Right, the B4 project, and you know now other large-scale networks, Microsoft, Facebook, have been open about you know similar designs. So you know, so that was a killer app where you have a very expensive resource, where to optimize it to drive utilization up to near 100% of this wide area backbone between their hyperscale data centers. That's what they wanted to try to achieve, would be totally unthinkable in a traditional WAN, right? That you could do that and actually support critical real-time applications at the same time, right? Because how could you possibly deal with the, you know, the congestion and the packet loss would affect everyone? And the way you deal with that is you need a lot more knowledge about the network. You need to know the applications. You need to know priorities, what the application's goals are. You need to know about expected traffic volumes, for example. You need to know more.
Yeah. So just because you've configured the network to operate in a way that you understand it, you haven't necessarily configured the network the way it actually is working. So if your circuits get to 100%, what do you do when you load shed?
That's right. Exactly.
You know, and SDN didn't solve that problem. It didn't suddenly say, well, if this circuit gets to 80%, start putting traffic load on this longer path over here. We did talk, it was possible in SDN to start talking about what they call it, least dollar routing, where you might say I could statically configure the network to route my email traffic from London to Sydney to New York when Sydney is offline so that my main circuit is loaded. But it didn't do it dynamically as such, which is actually what we want. What we want is, oh, the circuit from London to New York is now overloaded. Well, I should just now work out automatically that traffic can be, email traffic can be routed from London, Sydney, New York, and I can save money. And
I think someone would argue with you on that distinction, Greg, mm-hmm. because I think there's been some software that is dynamic in that way. But I think as we push towards... Well, Brighton, is you're calling it IBN as if that is a popular and well-recognized acronym, but I guess it's going to be intent-based networking, IBN, and we're all going to have to stop thinking about Big Blue whenever we use that. But it's almost like we're trying to make the distinction between automation and orchestration, where orchestration is the system, and then automation is the tooling that's used by orchestration to make something happen. And it's... Greg, it sounded like you were trying to define SDN almost as automation and IBN, intent-based networking, as orchestration from a certain point of view.
Yeah, well, so I think, taking this example of does SDN, automate that kind of real-time traffic control for you? SDN itself doesn't as a concept, right? So where I was going with that is... You can build an SDN that does, right? But you need to understand that killer app use case like Google did. And they built some pretty advanced flow-based optimization algorithms and built that into an SDN system for them, right? That solved that wide area traffic optimization problem in using this global optimization, which is the only, you couldn't have done that traditionally. But that was a particular killer app use case. And then there's this other killer app use case, which is software-defined data centers, micro-segmentation, right? Mm-hmm. And what I would say is, a couple of the first killer apps for SDN, the challenge is for IBN, okay, you want to raise the level of abstraction. Can you do that and still automate the things that the enterprise really wants to achieve, right? Because again, there's no magic in understanding the whole goal of what the enterprise is trying to achieve.
So with intent-based networking, what we're actually saying is, could we define intent-based networking as software-defined networking was really about using software to configure the network, but not just the devices themselves, although that's part of it, but also the end-to-end path. And intent-based networking is saying it's a much more flexible way of saying I have a purpose and I should configure the network according to my purpose, not according to what some engineer has translated into a programmable speak, like a programming model.
Yeah. So I'd say the emphasis is, like you said, it's on what you're trying to achieve. Mm-hmm. And that was part of SDN's goal as well, right? Mm-hmm. Of achieving something at a higher level. So that I would say is actually common, although there's a more explicit emphasis in intent-based networking on, okay, that's really what matters. Whereas in SDN, there's all this, there's a little bit more of the mechanism involved in what people typically think about as an SDN. There's a open interface to the data plane, number one, right? Like OpenFlow, but not necessarily OpenFlow. Yeah. Then there's a centralized controller, which is going to somehow, program all of these data plane elements. And then there may be higher level software abstractions on top of that controller. And I think if IBN is saying, all right, never mind all of those low-level details, you don't necessarily need OpenFlow. Who knows what the device is? We only care about the intent. And in particular, that means that a IBN system might be orchestrating a heterogeneous collection of existing routers and switches that are speaking BGP, right? That are using traditional technologies in order to achieve programmatic world and a higher level goal.
Yeah, so a lot of people are using BGP as an API still. They use a route reflector or they're using AFIs in BGP to propagate configuration information to devices in the network. That's a very popular way of approaching it while we wait for Yang models to finish and things like gRPC to mature. But I think the challenge with intent-based networking is just how complicated it is to turn intent into something configurable. Like going back to the routing for dollars example that I just gave you, you know, how do I know when to start diverting traffic across a path, and how do I know when to undivert the traffic? Because Sydney is now, the time zones have changed. All of a sudden, the traffic flows have changed, and now my intent is changed.
Well, and I think that goes to a more fundamental question, Greg, which is what do we mean? You know, what sorts of things can we express and call it intent? Because we've been talking about business intents, but then we've also, you know, some of the examples I've seen of intent-based networking are much more explicit. Like, it's not a business intent so much as I want to build a leaf spine network that's got, you know, 8 nodes in the first stage of the leaf and 4 spines. Okay, well, that's, I don't care how it gets built, but that's what I want to have built. Well, that's not really a business intent. It's just, it's more like build me a network. So, there's some qualification that we need to have here, which is, am I as a business person going to be expressing intent and expecting technology to fulfill that intent? Or am I a technologist who kind of interpreted the business intent already, and now I'm going to request that the network be configured in the way I think is going to meet that business request?
Yeah, I think that's, you hit the nail on the head here. So, first of all, there's no magic dividing line between like low-level implementation and high-level intent. They're very different, but it's a continuum, right, between there. Like, do you express what you want in terms of VLANs and VRFs and IP prefixes? Do you express it in terms of like, I want, this particular topology, but I don't care about the numbers? Or do I say, I want a high performance network, right? That's even more abstract. So it's a continuum there. And I think there's the big question for automation more generally, and for driving the network to be more software defined, is how do you carve out these well-defined use cases that are scoped enough that you can actually write the software to do it, to automate it? But that are also broad enough that it's not just solving a problem for, you know, one enterprise. It's actually a pretty broad collection. And so that's, I think, what across SDN and IBN, what the industry is kind of searching out is, what are these killer use cases that they can carve out?
It always goes back to those use cases, because somebody wants to make a product that someone can look at and go, ah, that solves a problem I've got, as opposed to, here's a bunch of tools you can do something cool with that everyone's like, huh, I'd have to learn how to use those tools. Yeah, not interested. So again, So back to the use case thing.
That's right.
It always comes back to the use case, and the use case is what is actually the challenge we have today. In some senses, we could still artisanally, hipster style, you know, crank the coffee machine and make a cup of coffee that you've, you know, is the best in the world. But who's got time for artisanal coffee?
Yeah, and even if we can build that that custom network, you know, I think most networks are reaching the point now where that's really not feasible, right? To completely build and manage a large complex network in a very manual way. You can put in more time, but there's still going to be human error. There's still going to be the fact that it, you know, slows down the business, slows down deploying new services or upgrading the network and so on, if you're doing all of that manually.
How big of a role does the complexity of the network play in what we're going to end up with for intent-based networking solutions? So, you know, my thought here is that if we all had simple, predictable networks that followed some, let's say there was some industry standard document that we as network designers all followed and said, oh, for this problem, I use solution, you know, 102 out of the book, you know, and if we all had those reference models and adhered to them, it would be pretty easy as a vendor to build solutions, but we don't. We've got, as you said, large and complex networks that vary widely from enterprise to enterprise and SP to SP. What challenges does that introduce for someone trying to build that killer use case, if you will?
Yeah, so that I would say is, it's something of an open question. We're in the early days of IBN, and we're sort of a few years into SDN. And this is something I would say that, you know, if you have answers to that question, whoever has answers, that's a startup opportunity. and you're taking a bet on it. So one aspect is the fact that the network is so complex is actually a driver to automate. On the other hand, it also means that it makes it difficult because you have to deal with a lot of brownfield technology, a lot of complex requirements, a lot of kind of organic growth in a network that is not going away. And so how that ends up happening may depend on what piece of an IBN system that you're talking about, right? And going to maybe the next level of depth of talking about IBN, it is a concept that's getting scoped out, but Gartner has taken a crack at it, and there's a, an emphasis which I think is useful that they've illustrated, which is that you need to automate the whole control loop and understand the intent, how to automatically provision, implement the intent in the network, but then also automate understanding of the network. Okay, what is actually there? What's happening in the network? Did I achieve, and am I continuously achieving what I actually wanted to achieve?
So there's two sides to intent, I think. Well, actually three sides. A, there's what you want to achieve. Two, there's what's actually happening in the network. And three, how you're actually going to implement it, I think.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Right. So how you're actually going to implement it, we kind of know that because it looks like SDN. That is, I can give these configuration commands to an SDN type of, and they can execute. Now, sometimes that SDN is, SSH in and run the CLI. Sometimes it uses BGP. Sometimes it uses Yang and gRPC or whatever it is, right? Or RESTConf, mm-hmm. whatever you. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a solved problem. So let's focus on the other two. And let's imagine that everybody understands what it is you want to do with your network. I'm actually not sure that everybody does, but let's just for the sake of the argument, pretend that everybody.
That is a huge assumption there.
That's a huge assumption right there, which is why I flagged it and said you actually understand enough. Because in the assumption that you understand what your network's trying to achieve, you have an inherent understanding of what the network cannot achieve for you, right? The internet does not infinitely solve every single problem. It has arbitrary limits. As that, we know that that's a fact because Google has a private WAN, Dropbox is building a private WAN. If internet was the answer to everything, then they wouldn't be building private WANs because those companies aren't interested in building fixed price infrastructures, right? And so we know that you need to understand. And so let's go with that. So if intent-based networking is going to, so let's go back to the second part, which then is how does intent-based networking, if you build an intent-based system, how does it know what to configure? How does it know what's happening in the network? How do you create that software? What does that software look like? What do the levers in that look like?
Yeah, so the understanding half of that control cycle for intent-based networking, first of all, it needs to understand a large collection of devices that may be heterogeneous, right? I think this is one of the important emphases in IBN is that you're going to have a heterogeneous network. It's not going to be sort of all one uniform, simple, open flow API. You're going to have some Yang and you're going to have some SSH into the command line perhaps and whatever else.
And it's not just routers and switches. It's firewalls. It's load balancers. It's arbitrary, arcane devices that might actually not be about allowing packets to flow, but preventing them.
That's right. Right. It could be, the entire network now spans, devices that maybe you haven't even rebooted in decades, all the way up to, a virtual network that was spun up, 3 seconds ago. so very different lifespans there. So there's this diversity of physical gear that doesn't have one API. There's traffic flowing through that gear. You need to understand the functional behavior, perhaps. If you really want to achieve that goal of, okay, is the reality matching the intent, right? Then we're not talking about, say, just monitoring some traffic. We'd need to understand how that functional behavior of the network, what could it do, right? Mm. Not only a few examples of what did happen in the past, but can we, somehow understand in a more abstract way, okay, what is the functional behavior of this large heterogeneous system? Mm-hmm. And how does that somehow align with a precise description of the intent, right? And
so this is where you started. This is where your company Veriflow started from. Is you did research at university about building a network model using mathematics.
That's right. Yeah. So pretty early in my career as a professor at University of Illinois, we started poking around with this question of, okay, if networks are pretty complex, can we somehow automatically understand what they're actually doing, right? And yeah. That led to the idea of building a model of the network and then verifying the model, right? Okay. And so that's a field of computer science called formal verification, mm-hmm. which is really about intent, right? Because it's saying you've got some system and you've got some intent and you want to mathematically analyze the system to understand whether it's going to achieve the intent, right? That's kind of the idea of formal verification. Or to put it another way, imagine I have a program and I want to know, did I write any bugs in my program, right? That's kind of what formal yeah. verification does. And what, you know, we started looking at doing initially at the University of Illinois, and then my co-founders, Matt Caesar and Ahmed Khurshid, and I later founded a startup based on this, was take that concept of formal verification and bring it to networking.
Okay, listeners, we're taking a break from our show to discuss today's sponsor, Live Action. Live Action wants you to turn SD-WAN disruption into business transformation with machine learning insights. Lots of marketing buzzwords there, so what are we really getting at? Think of it this way. If you adopt SD-WAN, one of the reasons you do so is probably a cost benefit. You get a return on investment because you can use more than one WAN provider, sometimes internet circuits. Use them all in an agnostic way because you've got an SD-WAN overlay. However, there's some complexity that's abstracted away underneath. So how do you deal with issues that crop up when you've been removed a step from the physical circuits and control plane schemes that you are familiar with? That's the point of the Live Action webinar on Thursday, October 26th at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. I, Ethan Banks, am joining John Smith, Live Action CTO, to discuss best practices to reduce the complexity of adopting SD-WAN, to govern service assurance using network insights that allow you to be proactive because you got to enforce those SLAs, what's nice to know when things are going bad before it gets serious, and to make sure that your application is working over the WAN the way you said it would when you recommended this whole SD-WAN install to the company to begin with. John and I are going to go through some SD-WAN market feedback that Live Action has gathered, and then some use cases for their technology. And then finally, we're going to demo the Live Action platform. And when we do so, we are going to focus on three key features. One, we are going to look at real-time network visualization and topology maps for complete situational awareness. This is the main part of their interface, the one I've seen the most and which I have always liked. Two, we're going to look at continuous machine learning from customer data to provide real-time human-in-the-loop insights for better service management. And I've talked to them about this, the machine learning claim, and I believe it's legit. What they're doing with this data is very interesting. And then three, we're going to look at dashboards, reports, and systems integration for service assurance governance, how you know those SLAs are being enforced. And anyway, hope you're there at the event. It should be a good time. I have admired the Live Action interface for quite a while now, and I do love nerding out with CTO types who are passionate about their product. If you want to be there, great, you got to register. So register today at www.liveaction.com/go/WAN. And while you're there, you can prep for the event by visiting Live Action's Live NX Insight product page. That's where you can find all the information about the product we're going to be demoing. And then you can read their blog, Three Challenges to Consider as You Approach SD-WAN Monitoring. One more time, register using www.liveaction.com/go/WAN, and I hope to see you there. You got to explain the math part of this, Brighton, because my brain says, okay, if I do a quote-unquote formal verification without any academic definitions attached to it, my logical brain goes, okay, I'm going to sit and I'm going to think really hard and make sure that what I did was correct. And there's no math involved. It's more of a logic exercise, you know, working through what's there and so on. And I can't readily come up with how math even applies to this kind of a situation. So can you help me understand what how math and formal, you know, formal verification, as you put it, what are those, what does that look like?
Yeah, so it is logic, and I'm using math here to encompass logic as well. But yeah, you're exactly right. It's fundamentally sitting and thinking really hard about a design and logically reasoning about it, except that the thinking really hard is now done by a computer instead of a human.
And then has to conform to some sort of programmatic steps that I guess conforms with what? Somehow you've got to put a network into a set of equations that you can parse through, something like that?
Yeah, exactly. So if we think about formal verification in other domains, software, okay, that's already a hard problem. Give me a program and prove that, you know, there's no input that causes it to crash, or prove that it, you know, achieves some other goal that, you know, something will always be executed in so many instructions at most, or something like that, right? There's some property of interest in the software. And if you think about code, code is complex because you can have sort of this exponentially large set of control paths that could be executed depending on the input, right? That's a piece of software. Now, in a network, those control paths are there as well, right? They are paths through the network, but not just physical paths. They're also execution paths because the network itself is basically a bunch of little compute elements that are, you know, processing traffic and consulting tables and maybe even modifying their own state within the network as this is in flight. So that's kind of the concept there. But then there's this other problem even before you get there. I think what you were hinting at, which is, okay, in the software world, we started with a program, right? If we wanted to verify a program written in C, there's a pretty well-defined specification for how C code is supposed to execute. If we now move over to a network, it's a mess, right? There's all of this gear from different vendors. It's not specified exactly what it does. There's no APIs. You know, you have to SSH in and, you know, run show commands in many cases, or maybe you're even telnetting in and running show commands, and it's printing out, you know, a mess of text in some format.
No predictable way to get the data, no predictable data that you're even going to get, and the data that you do get is not structured, right?
So, exactly. So, you know, the first step there, which is, you know, a heavy lift in the real world, is that you need to take that messy reality and somehow translate it into a collection of explicit logical rules. Like, okay, this is a processing element within the switch, and it's going to inspect these bits in a packet header, and it's going to compare them in this way, and, you know, if they fall in this range, it's going to, the packet's going to be dropped. Otherwise, it's going to, you know, go on to the next stage. And if you kind of think about, like a Broadcom switching chip, there are, you know, there's actually a stage, there's a pipeline within each switch, right? So each switch or router or firewall is not just one thing. It's, there's a lot of steps that it's executing within it, right? And you basically need to take the messy reality and translate it into a program, essentially a piece of software that, a simple piece of software that the each element is executing. So there's that big challenge of saying, okay, mathematically or logically, what's a precise description of what this network is doing? And then can you analyze it? Can you analyze this astronomical set of possibilities about what could happen?
So there's another question, astronomical set of possibilities. The larger and more complex the network gets, the number of elements and possible paths and conditions and so on that you need to analyze increases, well, exponentially, I suppose. So, you know, I'm going to make a guess here that the code you have to run in order to explore all those permutations has got to be very tight and efficient in order to be able to pull that off in a timely manner.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so if you think about the number of possibilities, like the scope of what could happen, obviously is large because the network is physically large, You know, you might have tens of thousands or more of points where you can inject traffic in different ways, and then it goes through multiple hops through the network, maybe many hops.
I just want to jump in here. Surely that's not as complicated as a C program, which has thousands of lines and branches and potential paths and logic inconsistencies. Surely a network is simpler than a large-ish C program.
Exactly. Yeah. So that is a great point because it's absolutely true that if you take the network and you start thinking about it as a single large distributed software application, it's quite complex, but it's not as complex as totally arbitrary software. And that's kind of fundamental because, you know, it has to be extremely efficient in processing packets, so the elements are simpler. So if we think about a spectrum here, there's some systems that are like so simple that, you know, you can draw it out in a little diagram and figure out what's going to be happening and, okay, no problem. And then as you increase the complexity, you can get all the way to arbitrary software, which is infeasible for formal verification in general. So even a computer can't analyze software and guarantee that it will always be able to answer your questions about whether the program crashes. So you're absolutely right that when you talk about the complexity of general purpose software, it's in the general case, it's beyond what even computers themselves can reason about. And what we felt was exciting about applying formal verification to networks is that networks fall in the middle of that spectrum, where it's way more complicated than humans can reason about, but it's within the scope of what can be automated to understand.
ThousandEyes, our sponsor today, says that they change how you see the network. And as someone who's spent many hours with their product, that's not just a tedious marketing claim from yet another monitoring company. Rather, ThousandEyes gives you insight into the parts of the network that you don't own, but that your critical services run across anyway. Imagine being able to monitor in detail the internet between you and your customers or between you and your SaaS providers. With ThousandEyes, you can do exactly that. You will be able to see every individual router between you and the target you're monitoring, along with a historical view of the BGP state, alternate paths, as well as latency and loss metrics all across the internet, that network you do not own. The monitoring tests are run via ThousandEyes cloud agents, enterprise agents that you place at useful spots in your infrastructure, or on endpoints like laptops. So you can get a true end-to-end graph of a path no matter where it starts and ends, inside your network or outside of your network. You can go up the stack as well. Do things like track CDN performance, look at DDoS attack and analyze it. Check out DNS server errors. Look at issues within your ISP's network using internet outage detection, which is a really cool ThousandEyes feature. You can measure mean opinion scores for VoIP paths and do in-depth web transaction monitoring to find out why that web server really is slow. And all these features are available through an intuitive interface that you drill into to get right to the root cause of the problem. When the root cause is spotted, you can then create a shareable report, which is really handy when you want to share what you found with that upstream third party that you might not have a business relationship with. If you are interested in ThousandEyes, you can check them out at ThousandEyes.com/packetpushers. Sign up there for a free trial and a free t-shirt.
Ethan, I think this comes back to one of my regular unicorns that I ride around, which is that networking of 10 years ago was actually quite simple and it was possible for a human to do it. But networking of today is exponentially more complicated because of the increasing number of network nodes. And that's why we need new tools like SDN and IBN to make sense of it than to be able to actually operate it.
Well, Brian, I'm going to hand this back to you because I think, is it not true that it's more than just the physical network and so on? It's also the nature of the traffic going across that network, which can change the look and feel of how a network behaves, all depending on what sort of a flow is going across it, yeah?
I think we've always had that, right? So even when I was deploying, you know, 64K frame relay connections and we were bridging NetBilly over the top of that, that has always been a problem and we've always managed to cope with that.
But from a standpoint of verifying the network and how it's going to behave, you can't, you know, what the nature of the traffic flow is a part of that verification process that increases the complexity of the problem is all my point.
So that's why we need verification now that we didn't have before. When I had a, you know, 6-node, 20-node, 50-node WAN, I could comprehend that logically and probably even track all the devices mentally. But once you get an explosion of those, and now all of a sudden your data center has gone from 50 servers to 500 servers, and now it's gone to 1,000 VMs or more, you know, in whatever the number is. Now you've got a problem where verification becomes necessary because tracking the end-to-end flow is infinitely complicated, or effectively infinitely complicated to a person, because you can't track that much data or that much information.
Yeah, I think both those dimensions are very important. Yeah, and if you look at what could happen, every bit in the packet header could flip, and could the traffic could have different behavior based on it. It's different traffic, right? And so you've got a few hundred bits in the packet header, right? And so the number of behaviors there is exponential in that, you know, 2 to the several hundred, and already you get a number that is, you know, more than the number of atoms in the observable universe. So obviously not something you're going to think mentally, what's going to happen to this packet? What's going to happen to that packet? What, right? So, and that's part of the logical reasoning, is to reason about what we called in our research paper equivalence classes of traffic, where the model would figure out, okay, given the network-wide constraints and rules and interactions, I can still nevertheless prove that if your traffic matches a certain signature, it's going to have the same behavior network-wide. And then I can reason about those equivalence classes of traffic.
Make inferences without having to run a, you know, a check against every single possibility.
Exactly. Yeah, you don't have to run through every packet, but you can know that you covered all your bases, mathematically speaking, by, you know, reasoning about these units of equivalence classes. So yeah, so that's kind of part of the core of, you know, one of the research papers we published developing this verification technology.
Okay, so let's actually kind of reverse engineer this. So we started talking about intent-based networking and then headed into the realm of verification, and that now bring that, just so it's very clear in everyone's mind, bring that back again as to how that matters for intent-based.
Yeah, so I think it's about that whole picture of the control cycle, that you want to be focused on the intent, and that includes implementing it in the network, but at least as important is verifying that what's in the network actually matches, right? Because otherwise you're flying blind. And actually you can argue that you want to be understanding your in general, you know, you want to automate your understanding of the network at least as efficiently as you're modifying it, right? Otherwise, the risk is there that is, you know, some stray software bug or just a typo, you know, automates and increases the blast radius of some problem, and you know, now you've no idea what's going on. So it's about that whole control loop of implementing, but also understanding, and making that understanding automated as well as the implementation.
So then the next question is, you know, from a future of networking perspective, intent-based versus SDN, you know, the flow, the verification process, does this all become the norm? And I'm going back to the question we talked about earlier, those killer use cases. Are we consigned? And this is one of the things that's frustrated me about SDN right along. Back in the beginning of SDN, I was like, it's going to change everything, and the way we do networking will be all different now, and I won't have to log into the CLI anymore. I'll have my magical controller, and I'll drag things around, or I'll, you know, create a policy and push it, and it'll be just awesome. And instead, what we ended up with was a lot of point solutions. You know, this specific product does this specific thing, and yes, we use SDN to accomplish it, but never a holistic change out, a swap of the way we manage networks. So you end up with all these different tool sets all over the place. And, you know, is intent-based going to maybe be the thing that we all look to as an industry, and now this is the new way that we provision networks? I mean, Cisco's obviously got their big push. You know, you guys are in the market. Apstra's in the market. You know, and there's other people making noises, and we're already seeing early signs of intent washing from some marketing departments and so on.
Early signs? Gosh almighty, I thought we were well into that.
Maybe so.
As soon as Chuck Robbins got on stage and said intent, that was it. All the marketing plans were in the bin, and intent was the new SDN.
I think there is I'll say a couple things. There's both hope and there's, you know, reason for caution, right? That IBM can push forward this software-driven change of networking more quickly. You know, the one hope is IBM is basically, in a sense, it's the next version of SDN that's more practical by saying, okay, hold on. The reality is we have a lot of gear that exists today, a lot of protocols people are comfortable with today that have to interoperate. Let's automate on top of, you know, the BGP or OSPF or whatever it is, on top of current switches and protocols rather than completely reinventing the hardware, right? So that's more practical. It's also, you know, trying to shift the focus to as much as possible to the real business value rather than kind of having an emphasis. And that point is pretty fuzzy and abstract, admittedly, right? Because SDN also has concepts of, you know, having automating at a high level. So, but there is hope there because it's more practical in that way.
Now, let me ask you a quick question. Yeah. If you're building an intent-based networking product, like what we've seen announced from, you know, yourself and Apstra and Cisco as the first three, right, that have come to market quickest, should they be talking about the mathematics behind their modeling because to prove the point that they're truly automated? Like, I have the sense at the moment that Cisco's SD access intent is kind of like a Rube Goldberg machine where there's, you know, you pull the lever and these things happen. And if you pull a different lever, these other things happen. I'm not so sure that they've talked about artificial intelligence as part of their software-defined campus, which is their intent-based, you know, it does it auto-tragically, or whether it's actually got some real intelligence and some real modeling and clever software in there. Maybe it's too early. Like Cisco's still 2 or 3 years away from delivering that, I think, from what my reading of it. And maybe it's just too early to start talking about that because it's not finished. What do you think about that sort of thing?
That's a good question. I think, you know, we've got to see where intent-based systems go. How intelligent are they exactly in terms of that implementation half of the loop? And then also, you know, as we were talking about, there's this, how do you react in a way that really meets the business objective to all of this wide diversity of traffic and what it might do? How do you respond to events? There's a lot of scope there looking into the future, maybe for, you know, methods that could be called artificial intelligence or even learning, possibly. We'll see.
Or some sort of machine learning or some sort of intelligent, you know, or quasi-intelligent or, you know, not sentient, but, you know, some sort of intelligence behind there, some sort of a technology that's not just like, you know, if I punch this button and if my hardware is exactly this hardware and it matches exactly this configuration and I want to do exactly this intent, then I know how to do that. Because that's where some of the, you know, that's what I'm seeing so far.
The challenge is there that, you know, we want our networks, obviously we want them to be automated, but we also want them to be predictable. And
So like VMware's NSX, for example, just pretends most of the network doesn't exist. So it's really easy for them to configure it because all they're configuring is the VDSs in the ESX hypervisors.
Right. Going back to that very well-scoped killer use case. Yes.
Yeah. Definitely solving a use case, definitely worth $2 billion a year in revenue because it's solving a specific problem. But it's not intent-based. It doesn't intellectually work it out. And it only solves a very small part of the overall problem. It doesn't manage, you know, checkpoint firewalls or proxy servers or, you know, someone else's this or that or routing engines that have an ACL on them sort of thing.
Yes. That's right. Yeah. So that gets to the question of, okay, how high level does it need to be in terms of what you're telling the system to do in order to be called, you know, intent-based? I think that's a judgment call, to be honest.
So it's going to be a long road to hoe. Would you agree with that statement? It's going to be a long path to intent before customers understand the difference between intent and SDN and dynamic routing protocols.
I think that's true, right? And a long process for the industry overall to figure out, you know, what can we scope out that can be feasibly automated and produces predictable results that are, you know, flexible enough for a large number of enterprises.
Safe. And I think predictable is the key word there. So
yeah.
if you intend to do this, does the network actually do that? And can you prove it? Can you validate it? And that's where the formal verification models come in. And then when you actually, you know, get to the configuration, or you then got to see that that actually works. You need a telemetry or an analytics platform to either say, this is what's actually happening on the network. So even if this was my intent and my, you know, IB system actually did something. Did it actually do that, or did it blow up, or did traffic not meet the goals that I was trying to set on my tolerance or delay or jitter or something?
Right, exactly. As much as we like to automate at every step of the system, you know, from human input to, you know, the IBN software itself to, you know, the individual elements, you know, something can often go wrong. And the other thing is that because we're in a world where there isn't today going to be a single controller for the entire world, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to be dealing with a heterogeneous collection of systems, right? You might have your NSX and you have maybe another software-defined data center controller, and you have an IBN system, and then you also have a lot of traditional gear, and you have a cloud deployment and a second cloud deployment because you don't want to be locked into the first. And how are all of these pieces fitting together, right? And that's something that actually, if you're looking at understanding or verifying the network, you can perhaps look in an intent-based way across those pieces to at least see what your posture is today, even if you're not sort of ripping out every manual process and changing it.
Okay, well, I think we've probably got to the point where we've explained intent-based networking as far as we're going to go at this point in time. I think it's important to remember that we're on a pathway here. We went from hand-configured command lines, knowing that it was there, to starting to use scripting, to using SDN platforms. And I think increasingly intent-based is the natural successor to SDN. Now we're using software to configure our networks as a system, not as single elements of, you know, one at a time type things. We now need to think about how can we automate the SDNs, or how can we orchestrate the SDNs. What do you think, Ethan?
Well, you know how slow things moved? Because I was reflecting as we were recording this, one of the recordings you did way back about OpenFlow, talking to Martin Casado. And man, it was just going to change everything. And we could kind of see in our minds this path ahead of just what was going to happen in the networking industry, most of which has not happened. So, you know, is this the next thing? And is that kind of, you know, to me, this technology is so applicable and makes so much sense that I have almost no hope that it's actually going to take over. in the sense that there's just so much contention among the vendors, and everyone's clamoring and going after market share, and so despite all of the activity in the IETF, there's so little actual cooperation when it gets down to some of the fundamentals that we've got to solve, like a common API and a common way of doing things. So that really puts so many challenges out there. I don't know, man. It's interesting times still.
So this is the future. Like, we're looking 5 to 10 years out. And as we've said many times, it's a long, slow grind in enterprise IT. You know, public cloud, for all the hype around public cloud, is still relatively tiny. It's less than 3 or 4% of the total spend on IT today. So don't expect to rush out and, you know, intent-based networking is going to put you out of a job. What we're really doing is peering into the future here to see what it's going to look like. Brighton, any closing thoughts?
Yeah, I think that's right. And, you know, it's we're looking into the future, especially to see how to make the network more agile where we can. But it's really about understanding those use cases. I think to the extent that IBN is going to have success, just like SDN, it's going to be about really understanding use cases that matter and that can be predictably automated.
Yeah. And I also like the idea that there's mathematics behind this. It's not just sort of some random programming, you know, done by people who learned Python in the last year or two. I think the idea that you're building, you talked about mathematical verification as a formal science or formal discipline, is really interesting. And that intent actually has a foundation of true science underneath that makes me actually believe that we might get somewhere this time.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of thing I love doing these deep algorithms in the guts of the system. And, you know, it's also exciting that you can apply those algorithms to a real messy brownfield deployed network, right? Mm. Even if it's not entirely automated.
And that's key, because a lot of stuff we do with SDN assumes that you're going to burn down your brownfield and build on the ash that's left. An ash field, right? So if you go and look at ACI, or, you know, for example, any of the hardware centrics, Big Switch, they say you've got to go and buy these switches and put them in and then put our SDN controller on top, and that's how we work. And I call that, some people call that a patch of green. Some people call it an ash field, where you burnt down your brown field and put that on top.
I like
well, on
it.
That note, we might just wrap it up for there today. Thanks so much for joining us on the Packet Pushers. You can find this and many more fine, free technical podcasts along with our computer community blog at packetpushers.net. We have a membership system which you can sign up to, which will get you a part of our magazine, our Human Infrastructure Magazine, which is a newsletter that goes out bi-weekly, and also gets our weekly newsletter, which sums up the world in links. We send you the links and of things that we read, post-it note, research papers, all sorts of really cool stuff that you should find out. You should definitely head over to packetpushers.net/members and sign up for that. You can also find us on social media. On the Twitter is at Packet Pushers. We're on LinkedIn. We hang out on Facebook because, well, we have to, really. But if you could rate the show on iTunes, that would be great. And last but not least, remember that too much networking would never be enough.